It's me, Xerxes, and if you're in the greater New York metro area, or you're pretty open to long last-minute car trips, you need to be at the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo 019 in Garden City, New York. It's on August 10th and 11th. That's this coming weekend. At 11 a.m. Saturday, I'll be joining Jeremy Parrish for the Retronauts panel, along with Hardcore Gaming 101's founder, Kurt Collada, and we'll be talking about amazing Misfit game consoles. Then at 2:30 p.m., Kurt and I will have our own panel, the Hardcore Gaming 101 panel, where we'll discuss and rank a few treasure-developed classics, and we'll be doing it with a live convention center audience. That's right, you can be part of the show. Then at 7 p.m., there's a meet-and-greet with booze and perhaps food. I'll probably be at the area with all the foreign microcomputers, and I'll be wearing a name tag. The convention center itself is really rad. It's a great place to bring your kids to. There are tons of arcade cabinets, weird consoles, light gun games, tournaments, PC games, tabletop games, cosplay contests, and for the first time ever this year, pinball. So I'll see you this Saturday at Long Island Retro Gaming Expo in Garden City, New York. 11 a.m. for Retronauts, 2:30 p.m. for HG101's panel, 7 p.m. for the meet and greet, but only if you buy a ticket. That's kind of like a key part of the whole transaction. Go to expo.liretro.com to take care of business. That's expo.liretro.com. Do it.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source, the brain train, your knowledge, a lay maintain with a course aimed at colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor. Thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as to Tanga, Cal, and Bobinator, Booker, Hart, and others. Discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure. And look, they wrote a book about it. Go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power.
I was hoping you'd be dead so that I'd be debt-free.
All right, welcome to episode 216 of Hardcore Gaming 101's Top Games Podcast, where we are doing Sword of Vermilion.
Yay.
Yeah, a game by... Oh, wait, well, let me stop. It was nominated to us by Armored Priest on Stitcher, because who else would nominate Sword of Vermilion? Developed by Sega AM2. Yes, that division... who brought us Outrun and Space Harrier and a bunch of really amazing games published,
a lot of things
naturally.
Are starting to make sense.
By Sega on the Genesis, which is also unsurprising. None of this should be surprising. It was released, I believe, December 16th-ish, 1989 in Japan, which I don't know if that makes it a launch title, but it makes it a very early Mega Drive game. And who here? I'm Carl, and everyone else is here to talk about Sword of Vermilion, because they love it.
Yeah, hi, I'm Clade.
I'm Bobinator.
I'm Slow Beef.
Yeah, and this game, is a revenge story. An evil guy killed your dad, and I guess your mom, who were the king and queen of, is it Kara? No, it's,
Excalibur.
Is it Excalibur your town? Is that where you come from?
I think so.
Okay. And you were sequestered away in a tale as old as time by Blade, the king's most amazing loyal knight, who then raises you as his own son, and you then start the game with him on his deathbed, literally, where he reveals to you that you are, in fact, Eric, king of the, well, I guess inheritor of the throne of Excalibur.
You guys, I'm Prince! Bingo.
What?
Prince of Excalibur.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
That's right. And then you basically go on a really long quest to collect 8 rings for some reason to defeat the evil empire of Karatharan or something like that. If I don't sound super enthusiastic, it's a really boring story. It's incredibly boring.
I will say, this intro, though, if I may, is delivered over a pretty bitchin' soundtrack, if I do say so myself.
It's amazing. The game launches up and it blows you away.
I gotta ask, though, real quick. Is Yu Suzuki okay? Because he kind of has this thing about dead fathers, doesn't he?
It's like one of those things, right? It's like how Walt Disney, like, they never have, like, mothers, right?
Yeah.
The
absent father or the basically dead father is a very common trope, especially in Japan, of developers who were raised in the 70s and sort of that sort of period. There's a very absent family in those sort of period of time. Still is, really, but they still make games like that, so.
I mean, it's a good way to start a story. Yeah. It's also like kind of that trope of like, oh, you have your heritage, your not divine, but you know, you're like your birthright and it's been denied to you and now you're going to get it back, you know.
You got to go get it back. Also the bad guys are really bad apparently. They seem to do nothing but murder people, which doesn't seem like useful in terms of empire and kingdom building, but yeah, that's what they do. And nobody really, people kind of try and help you in this game. They don't do very much to help you, but they will just kind of hand over the legendary rings if they've got them. I mean, most of them seem to have left them somewhere or lost them somewhere, but, you know.
As one does with a magical artifact.
So,
yeah.
So let me see, because I haven't played this game in years and years, right?
That's true of everyone that likes the game.
So I'm going to see if I can remember what happens, and you tell me where I'm mistaken, if I'm...
That's okay, I'm definitely well up to speed with this one.
You're in a crappy sort of menu-based first-person dungeon crawler with a tiny little camera port in the upper left.
That's correct.
A crappy little mini-map in the upper right and some status
That's crap. Definitely true.
You are looking at the box art as a kid and seeing cool things, and then you get into a random encounter, and then all of a sudden you're in this dinky overhead world where 8 little slimes hop towards you, and you have this tiny sword with no range that you bash at them, and then you get stuff, and then you go to a dungeon, and then there's a very brief side-scrolling thing that looks really cool, but you can't barely move in it, and there's a boss that's super easy, and you can't turn around,
And you can't jump.
Although it's not really a menu-based.
Every second of this game is terrible in its own unique way.
It was
with a
so
bitchin' soundtrack, by the way.
Yeah, bitchin' soundtrack.
Absolutely
indeed.
Great soundtrack.
It's literally like top 10 Mega Drive soundtracks comfortably. And it's like, what are you doing here?
It's like, how dare you? You know?
Like, you can hear this music. Like, maybe if you go to, I can't remember the mod site where you can just download all the Mega Drive music, like VGM or whatever. I can't remember
Project
the exact
2612.
Name of it. Thank you. That one, Project 2612. You go there, and Sword of Vermillion will be like really high in the list, and you'll hear the music, and you'll be like, "Oh yeah, this sounds really good." And then you'll stupidly load up the game because there's no way a game that has music this good could be so boring and barely competent. Also, it's by AM2, so of course it's gonna be good. They've like made nothing but hits for like 15 years.
I remember that fucking box art, seeing that as a kid, and seeing that overhead section, thinking, oh my gosh, this might be like The Legend of Zelda, but on Genesis! man, that sucked to find out about.
I bought this for $8 on the Wii.
Yeah, wait, you paid on the Wii? They sold you this?
Yeah, because I was like, wow, a Genesis RPG that I haven't heard of? Oh no. Oh, I've been robbed.
the box art, the front cover, I hate it more than anything, looking at it now.
I mean, art is the stupidest freaking thing in the Western release, right? It's just like the close-up of some lame-looking guy with, like, a crown or something on his head.
Yeah, and it looks terribly drawn. Yeah, he has this crown, and it looks like a romance novel for horses, because he's staring at this, like, horse lovingly. And the horse is, like, the horse is so detailed!
Look at like, all the veins on that horse. They
I know,
all
but
the
everything
veins.
Else is still, like, kind of flat. They're like, get that, that fucking, get that
to be honest, though,
training.
You don't even get a horse in this game.
That's
no, you
so
don't get anything.
Pretty standard for Genesis box arts for some fucking reason. Like, yeah, every game had to have some weird, like, fantasy novel cover. Everything from Phantasy Star to Echo.
It's because, I don't know, it's because of, like, Golden Axe or something? Like, they made Golden Axe, and it's got the cool, like, what is it, like, Franco, not Franz Frazetta, the other guy, you know, the, like... Said,
Boris Vallejo.
Yes.
That's what I was going to say.
Yes, the guy who isn't, you know, he was like, well, we can't afford Frazetta, we'll get the other guy. That's the guy.
You watch what you're saying about Vallejo, son.
He doesn't have the grasp of anatomy that Frazetta had.
I suppose.
But
man could draw a mean dolphin, though.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, so they got Golden Axe, and that must have sold well. So they went, I don't know, let's just make all of our box art this. That's fine.
Oh, no, but they hired Vallejo for a lot of those covers. Yeah. That's the best part.
You know what I remember? Because this came with a hint book, too, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure it did, because it was a 1989
I think it was
RPG.
Only the American release. I don't think I got one in PAL. I think I just got, like, a little, like, fold-out book. I don't think I got a,
and
like...
I remember...
It's over 100 pages.
Thankfully spoils, too, that there's one part in the game where there's a guy who's like, hey, you want me to make you a great sword? And if you say yes, he just takes all your money and you can't do anything about it. And it's like...
This game is the best.
Yeah. And he'll make you the best sword in the game later, but you have to be like, okay, I guess you just stole my money.
Well, the great thing is that's probably, like, that's sort of legitimately the best part of this game other than the music. Is there is a surprisingly large amount of written dialogue and text. Some of it is not bad or is mildly amusing. You know, the shopkeepers sometimes say, like, little funny flippant things, or each town has a bunch of NPCs that do a little bit of world building. Not a lot, but more than you would expect from an 8-bit game, because this game was early 16-bit, you know, Sega ran in and said, haha, the NES can't do this, and they were definitely right, because most NES
games. Wow, you're right, better. We've never made a big game this bad for the NES.
But yeah, like, I actually did appreciate when I was playing the game, I was like, wow, these text boxes are actually large and fit a lot of text in them. And that was
awesome,
you know.
Yeah, I can fit my name into a text box in this game.
Yeah.
I can even do that in Phantasy Star 2.
No, it's that part is pretty good. Graphics are not good, except for the, as we mentioned, the side-scrolling boss fights. They have these really cool, like, giant monster sprites. They have exactly one frame of animation, so they just kind of stand there awkwardly, but they look great. They shoot fireballs at you, and it's just a pain in the ass.
So convinced that they only added that in to, like, get you to buy the game, like, to put, like, a picture of that on the boxes in the magazines.
I'm sure. Well, considering it was made by Sega AM2, I think they were like, we don't want to make an arcade game, so we'll just make an arcade game that's an RPG, and then they fell down the stairs and made this.
Well, because that's right, because, like, basically, this game has four different genre types. Real quick, you've got the towns, which are basically RPG towns. You've got the dungeon and outer town thing, where you just wander around like a grid, first person thing and third person. You've got the fights, which we mentioned, and we got the other fights, which we also mentioned. And for some reason, this was briefly impressive. It must have seemed like a really good idea when they were scoping the game. None of it is fun, but it's all there, and it's really long, for reasons that are elusive, because the enemy spawn rate in this game is abysmal. You can take, like, two steps in the world map, and then you'll hear this familiar blah, 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 like
something
tone.
Else I want to point out, when you see a random encounter, you might get one enemy, you get might get, like, eight of them, you don't know.
It's amazing. I want to talk about the other combat, though. Anybody who wants to complain about East Bump combat, go play Sword of Vermillion for a hot minute.
Then try
to complain about East Bump combat. It'll make you really appreciate East Bump combat. That's all
basically,
I know.
Your character swings their sword. I know Beef said it earlier. Like, he just kind of, like, wangs his sword around. It's not a very good animation.
Basically, you kind of pull it out, you sway it around a little bit, and you put it back.
Well, you're going to mash it. And so you just go, wait, 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 wait.
It's horrible. And it's just, like, for some reason, it's bright blue. It's never explained why your sword is bright blue when your character's wearing regular colored armor, so for some reason they gave the sword Sonic's palette. I don't freaking know.
Oh, it was just a hint foreshadowing for Sonic in 2 years.
Blazing blue sword. You do get magic that you get to use. It's buried in like 4 sub-menus with a bunch of names that you really will want the hint book for, because much like Phantasy Star, it's got... They don't call the teleport spell teleport. It's called something like, you know, like shoe beam or something. Like, it's freaking useless. So good luck with that. But you can teleport between towns, blessedly, so that you don't, you know, have to walk between the really big overworld that's huge. The game is like, well, when I say huge, it feels really long because you take 3 steps and you run into an enemy and you either fight them or run away. And it punishes you for doing anything. Also, it does this one thing that makes me so absolutely furious, I can barely put it into words. Turning is not a free move. Yeah. Turning can spawn enemies.
Oh, and speaking of things, oh, yeah, I'll let you finish, sorry.
In, like, a dungeon, and you know, like, in a dungeon, how you, like, you hit, like, a wall, and you're facing a wall? If you're in, like, a dead end, so you're facing a wall, and there's a wall to both sides, if you turn around, so you take 1 step to the right or left, you can spawn an enemy in that wall! Like, you'll turn from facing a wall to facing a wall, and an enemy will pop up. And you're like, what the hell? At least let me turn around!
Yeah, no. That's really great. Although, my favorite part about Sword of Vermilion that I forgot about until I replayed it this morning, because I'd beaten it, God knows why, and then I replayed it today, I'm like,
I beat it too. Yeah.
Yeah.
You beat it?
Sorry. Yeah.
Well, I spent my $8 of my allowance on this damn thing in 28.
I had a 106-page hint book, and it did tell me for that guy who takes all your money to buy as many swords as you can, so at least you don't, you know what I mean? You can sell those.
So anyway, I replayed this game, and I found a chest. So I'm like, oh, that's what the open button does in this. You open chests. That's correct. I open the chest. Hey, there's some money in this chest. I turn around, I look at my money, and I see, wait a second, how much money was in that chest? I didn't get any more money. And then I'm like, oh, Christ, no, you have to be kidding me. Turn around back to the chest, open the chest, there's still money in the chest. You have to take the money from the chest.
Yeah, it's got those wonderful, like, 8-bit superfluous functions, because when you try and talk to someone in the town, you have to press the, you know, the open your menu button, and then choose talk. Even though I don't think you can do literally anything else to anyone in the game, it will not context sensitive it for you. It will just make you select from the menu, talk.
Three buttons, 2 of which do nothing.
And the great part is if you try and buy something from a shop, you go into the shop, you see the shopkeeper, you go, talk, and they will say, welcome to my shop, would you like to buy anything? Then you get to choose yes or no. If you choose yes, they will then display their wares, and then you can choose one of those wares, and they will say, would you like to buy this? You may say yes, then you will buy that one item, and then they will say, would you like to buy something else? And you can choose yes or no. So if you want to buy, like, you know, a few health potions, maybe some candles, stuff to stop you from dying, you've got to be like, yes, 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 mm-hmm. yes. No. Goodbye. Your character moves at a glacial pace. So
oh, God, yeah. That was the worst part about the intro. Because our listeners, have they been paying attention, they will remember that Cal said, you start at the deathbed of your surrogate father figure. That is incorrect. You start at the gate of the town in which you were raised.
You had to rush back to the town from whatever you were doing.
Well, yes, but you start at the gate. No great idea on where the hell this house is.
You never know where anything is.
No, but I remember having, when I started this, I'm like, all right, let's see where I go. And I try to walk out. It's like, you should go see your dad. I'm like, all right, okay. Which house?
Yep. And a big part of the game is going into a town and then stumbling through to every NPC there and talking to them. Because many of the towns will have an NPC that will trigger the progression of the game. There's an NPC that will give you a map somewhere in the town, and those are really important, otherwise you can't see crap in the overworld.
That's right.
Or,
I forgot about the maps.
Several of the towns, and there's some nice little cute little touches around there, but so there's one where an imposter has actually gone to the town and stolen the ring, and everyone's like, oh, I'm scared of you, Alex, or whatever you choose your character, Eric, name, thing. To mess you up with. Sorry, that's from the LP I was watching of this game. I think they call themselves Alex. They you will then, they'll be scared of you, and you have to talk to one person who is a little bit out of place, and then they will be like, hey, you're not my evil boss, and then they'll try and kill you, and that's when you'll then trigger the next part of the map where everyone will be able to go, oh, that was actually an imposter, at which point they will tell you where the imposter is, and then you can get the map to the imposter. And most of the towns do something vaguely like this, where you have to find someone to trigger the quest, and none of it's very interesting, which is kind of the big problem.
Yeah. Because I'll defend a lot of 1989 and even earlier RPGs, but man, this one just isn't interesting at all.
You know,
that's
what
a good
the problem
word.
Is, there's pretty much nothing in this game you couldn't do in a Master System.
Well, it's like the same problem. Actually, it's worse than that, right? Because the Master System has Phantasy Star, which has way better dungeons and a way better overworld.
I'm just going to say, though, this like game was featured prominently in the Genesis Does What Nintendo Don't ad campaign.
It got a 2-page spread.
It's a good-looking game in stills. Yes, in stills.
The boss fights look pretty good, but the towns are just boring. It's just brick on brick. There's nothing going on.
Yeah, but those colors are still pretty nice. Okay. I mean, like I said, in stills, like that's what attracted me, because I'm like, oh, hey, this game doesn't look like bright, garish colors like a Master System. Right?
Also, by the way, those ads claim the game is 300 hours long.
It feels it.
I mean, even if you know what you're doing, this game will take you about 10 hours to get through, because there is a ton of grinding in the game as well! Wow, that sounds like fun! You seriously have to grind. Even with all of the random encounters dragging you down, you need to get levels to stand a chance against anything in the game. So
I left you 100 gold or 100 kim of my life saving so you can equip yourself. It's your choice, a sword and shield or armor.
Yeah, so get the sword, because you need a sword. But
I should wonder what happens if you don't pick the sword.
I don't know, maybe you get an instant game over. You probably wouldn't. The game's only generous saving grace to this is if you die, and you will, probably somewhat often, you actually just get booted back to the last church in the last town that you visited, and the priesthood will take half your money. That's just the way it is. And then you basically just get to continue on your quest, which is fine if you are, you know, just spent all your money. Less fine if you just cleared like a boss and accidentally get yourself killed. That would suck.
Oh,
you would lose thousands of kim.
You know, this game actually might be one of the first cases I remember of a game leveling, healing you after a level up.
I mean,
you've identified the one thing that is objectively good about Sword.
Yeah, and it's, oh, and the weird thing is normally I'm not a huge fan of that because it kind of wonks off the balance a little bit, but man, it's everything in this game when you're like, I am so close to dead, and the game's like, here you go, have a free heal. I'm like, oh, thank Christ.
Yeah, because you do get some magic. You get magic in the menus, and you can use magic, but only in the, the top-down fighting mode, not in the side-scroller. In the side-scroller, where it would make sense for you to use magic because you're fighting the great, huge bosses, don't get magic there. You get an assortment of spells you can use in the combat.
You know what's also great about the battle sequences?
I'm going to hold you off for a quick second, Bob, and I'm going to explain why. I'm really sorry about this. This is the reason I think about Sword of Vermillion more than ever, the once since I played it, and I'm half convinced I did that out of balance reasons. For some reason, they figured magic is going to be unbalanced if we let it happen in the boss fights, because in this game, I think magic is usually just big explosions that deal damage on contact. So they're like, no, that's unbalanced when other games do that. We can't have magic ruining the boss fights, because it has to be the only reason. I'm sorry, I've been thinking about this for years, and it bothers the hell out of me, because I have no idea why they did that. Okay, go ahead.
So sorry, the best part of the battle sequence is, even if you have healing items, you can't use them until you're done with the battle.
Oh, God! Right.
You can only heal outside of battle, but you can run away. You can run to the corners. Not during the boss fights, though. You are trapped in them until you die or not, which is not ideal, because they're right at the end of really long dungeons. Yay!
Yeah. Yeah, and you can get pretty, surprised by them, I believe. Because it's usually,
that's right,
like,
it's the... It's the Phantasy Star kind of... you just walk into a tile, and then blah, 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 and something is there. Sometimes you can talk to them. A couple of the bosses are literally invisible on a tile, and then you step on the tile, and it just goes to a major boss fight. So watch out for those. Anything else? Beef, anything to say about Sword of Vermillion?
Such a cool name for a game, Wasted.
Right? Like, yeah, the game, the music, like, everything about the, like, because this is, I bought the game as well, on the Genesis, on the Mega Drive, in, like, 1994. For some reason, it was on discount. Can't imagine why.
But I was like, is looking...
Sword of Vermilion. Ooh, it looks pretty good. Looks a little bit like Wonder Boy, you know, like a Wonder Boy Monster World. Like,
oh, God.
Like, the side scrolling, I could see some stuff. I'm like, yeah, I like that game. Pretty good. It's got
Vermilion's a cool word.
Mm-hmm. And sword is on the title. Swords are cool. Look at this horse.
That man clearly loves that horse.
And then you load up the game, and just for like a hot second, it seems like it's going to be really good because it's got one of those really great Mega Drive title screens where it cranks awesome music. There's like a sword and a tree. It's
thunder.
And then there's like 14 layers of clouds like swooping through and like the
It's got like parallax clouds.
And you're like, yeah, here it comes. And then it's the worst goddamn thing. Where do we rank this?
I like to think, though, that Cal in 1994 had a choice between Phantasy Star 4 and Sword of Vermilion.
Oh, God. If I had made that choice, I would just be like, you're making me mad thinking about that.
Work my way up.
I'm sort of looking at Sonic Labyrinth at 472, to be honest. I'm trying to...
Sonic Labyrinth at 472.
Ooh. That's towards the bottom.
That might be about my floor.
I'm okay with that.
It's not a great game at all. Oh, that puts it above Order of the Griffin. That can't happen. I lied. Never mind.
I mean, Sewer Shark at least is funny.
I'd rather play this in Shadowgate 64, I'll say that.
Shadowgate 64 is a little lower at 481. This game is about as boring as Shadowgate 64. But at least you get to actually use your sword in this game, which bothers the hell out of me in Shadowgate.
All right, wait. Here's a good comparison point. 463 Last Battle.
I was going to completely screw up the pronunciation of that. Last Battle, I think, is at least kind of fun. It's just mean. Yeah.
I think it's worse than Last Battle.
Oh, yeah.
It's more boring, which I think is almost a worse crime.
Well, this one is so boring, and it's literally 10 hours long. It doesn't even, like, have the decency to end reasonably quickly. Yeah. Like, it's full of filler for a game that's nothing but boring filler. I mean, I don't think it's, like, I think it's, like, Tetris 2 at 471? We went all in on how bad Tetris 2 is, but is it? Like...
See, that's where I'm really stuck on this one, because this game is, I mean, its worst crime is it's just really, really, really dull.
But, yeah, I mean, it's just, like, the thing is, there's generic RPGs, but it's just also, like, this is just, like, it's kind of bad.
Well, because it's generic RPGs that it doesn't have a party. So you don't even have, like, maybe those little interesting fun moments of characters interacting with each other or anything. Like, there's nothing.
Combat.
It's your boring-ass guy who, for some reason, has green splotches on his face, which I don't understand. All the men in this game just have green, like, blobs on their face.
I wonder if that's not a CRT dithering sort of, you know...
I'm not convinced. I think it's like some weird, like, this isn't actually Earth thing, so everyone's just got green, like...
Knowing Sega, that's quite possible,
too. I think it's
bad
graphics.
Like a Star Trek thing where they're like, just put some paint on their face and they're an alien.
Knowing Sega, that's actually entirely reasonable.
That's why I think it's a Sega game. So I'm like, I don't know.
Because it can't ever be that they're just Earthlings in a fantasy world. No, it's like, they're from some planet that evolved to be medieval Earth for thousands and thousands of years.
You know, I do actually prefer Sewer Shock to this, but you know I like Sewer Shock. Blaster Master is at least vaguely competent. Like Blast Master 2. Okay, well, a little lower, we've got a kind of... It's an RPG. It's Dungeons & Dragons, Order of the Griffin. I love that one.
I don't hate it. I hated Order of the Griffin. So I think Alone in the Dark is a fairly decent floor.
I guess I don't hate it, but it makes me sad.
Okay, so above or below, Bill Laimbeer's Combat Basketball. How about that?
Below, because Bill Laimbeer's Combat Basketball is still the greatest name of all time, I'm gonna name my child that, so.
What a coincidence. My son's name is Sword of Vermilion.
And hence, my son is better than yours, so Bill Laimbeer's Combat Basketball goes above Sword of Vermilion.
Alright, below Bill Laimbeer's Combat Basketball, and above Alone in the Dark 2008. It's about number 480, and I gotta tell you, Sega, they don't like this game either, because they've discreetly dropped it from their completion games. They used to put it in there, but they've just been like, no more of this.
Don't ever fall for Sega selling this game. It's like the urban champion of Sega.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HD Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.